Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Shuttle Pod. This is episode 40.
Woohoo!
Woo!
Never thought we'd quite get here. And episode 40 is what episode, Jared Whitley?
This would be our Mirror Mirror episode.
Wow.
So the most... I think Mirror Mirror is arguably the most iconic episode of the original series, right? The image of Spock with the evil Spock with the beard is the greatest contribution the Trek, individual contribution that Trek has made.
Yeah, there's a band named after it, even.
Oh, is there? Oh, there you go.
Spock's Beard.
Spock's Beard. Haven't heard of them.
Yeah, I think they came out in the late 80s, early 90s. They were a band.
That's fantastic. Are they any good?
I don't remember, to be perfectly honest with you, which should probably tell you everything you need to know.
but regardless, we would like to talk about the Mirror Mirror at some point, but not today.
Indeed. But I digress. Anyway, I'm Brian Drew, and I'm here with Kayla Iacovino.
Hey, everyone.
Jared Whitley.
Hello.
And Matt Wright.
Hello.
And, well, we got a lot to cover today, gang. Last weekend was San Diego Comic-Con. Lots and lots of things happened. We want to talk about that. We want to talk about the trailer and our reaction and analysis of that. And we want to go through the characters that we know about from Star Trek Discovery. So without further ado, I am going to toss to Kayla, who spent 5 days, I think,
yep,
in San Diego last week. And Kayla, how did it go?
It was a whirlwind. It was madness. It was craziness that San Diego Comic-Con always is, but it was compounded by just the overwhelming amount of Star Trek stuff going on. You know, Star Trek hasn't been on television, as we mentioned all the time, in a long time now. And so seeing it back in its home, people are really excited about this. And CBS has really taken it upon themselves to market this thing the way that modern TV shows are marketed. And honestly, I think they're doing a great job. They had the buzzword this year for all the TV shows were doing what they were calling a quote-unquote immersive experience of whatever show, which basically means a room with some stuff, you know, a room outside of the con that has props and costumes and whatever. And maybe you get to, like, take a picture, or, you know, who knows, and post a GIF with their hashtag or who knows. But just, you know, Discovery had an immersive experience, which was a room with some stuff, but it was some awesome stuff. They had props and costumes that were all screen used from Discovery, which is shooting in Toronto right now. Nice. And a lot of these things we had never seen before. I got to get really up close and just take pictures out of the heck of all of those things. Tons of pictures. Get, you know, really close look at, like, those really super intricate, almost some would say overly complicated costumes. The Federation costumes with that, like, side panel with the deltas on it, and the, you know, the asymmetrical collar line and all these little details. And the Klingons are incredible. A lot of their costumes, we learned, have been 3D printed because they are so complicated that they can't actually be made with normal techniques.
Well, that is pretty complicated.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of discussions going on in the Trek community in San Diego this week about, is it too much? You know, what do we think? How does the look blend in with the canon? You know, what do we accept as fans? And I think there's a sliding scale on what different people will accept in terms of, is it too different from what we know about this era, or is it, you know, is it new and modernized enough that, like it kind of has to be for modern television.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky game they're playing there. And I think they've done pretty well with most, certainly with the props, which we got a good look at. The props are really a nice blend of very strong callbacks to what we know about that era of Trek with a really nice modern upgrades, in my opinion.
Good.
But yeah, so like, just like, I guess everything that's going on, there's the gallery, there was a Star Trek Discovery panel in Ballroom 20, which is the big leagues. That's the big, big ballroom that all the new TV shows go in. And then there was a Star Trek press conference and red carpet event where we got to interview some of the cast and crew from the show, and those are up on trekmovie.com right now. And yeah, we just like, we, there was just information coming out. We couldn't like take it all in. I think there's even stuff that I missed because I was running around the con that I learned about later. So yeah, I think to describe how it was, like, it was a whirlwind. It was fun. It was intense. It was a lot. And I'm really, it really is getting people excited for the show, I think.
Terrific.
I'm interested too in your guys' impressions as being our sort of boots on the ground. I guess I was the boots on the ground in San Diego, and you guys were back at base, like, you know, typing up and writing up all this stuff, editing our videos, publishing them. Everyone here is well aware of the just massive stream of stuff coming in. But what was that experience like for you guys?
If people don't know, it's exhausting on both ends.
Yep.
It was amazing, but exhausting to see all this stuff trickle in on our end, you know, kind of salivating going, oh, wow, you got to see that. You're looking at that. Oh, you're talking to those people.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing.
I think I can say that Trek Movie has never put out that much material in a 1 week span.
Yeah.
In its history.
Yeah. I can't think of when. Yeah.
In every form, audio, video, print, like, you name it. Like, we covered everything over the course of the past 10 days.
Mm. And we had,
it's amazing,
Twitter and Instagram and Facebook going as well.
Yeah. It was a remarkable job that done by so many people.
Yeah.
Indeed. Particularly those of you that were on the ground in San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to give major props to Christine, who, aka Starfleet Mom, who live tweeted the Discovery panel. And I'll tell you, I did not have FOMO. Like, I actually thought I was there. You know what I mean? You didn't feel left out. It truly was quite amazing. It was really great because it was like, oh, dude, okay, she got that. Okay, 2 seconds later, oh, you know, there's another post. Okay. And it was really awesome because you really...
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You really thought, okay, like, I've truly got a live stream of what's being said right now.
Mm-hmm.
It was really great. We topped ourselves. We've never done coverage like that before. It was amazing. Like, we, you know, new level for sure.
And some of our coverage was obviously during the Trek panel and the press conference. And Kayla, what were those like?
Like the press events?
Yeah.
Yeah.
While Christine was in the panel, I was over at the Hilton Bayfront, which is where they have all the press stuff going on, and sort of, you know, getting in line, getting my wristbands to get into the two events they had, which were a press conference, which was almost like a post-panel. So they brought all the panelists, everyone who's on stage in Ballroom 20, came over and came up and sat in a table, very much like in a panel, except the whole room was just press. And then we got a chance to ask questions as well. A few of us did. It was pretty fast. And there's so many of them on the panel that, you know, there's a lot of them talking, which is what you want anyway.
Yeah.
Sure. Honestly, though, I'm really glad that I had that experience because I feel like so much more. And I think this goes for everyone, too, people who are just watching the videos and stuff of this. But I feel so much more connected to these people. I knew I would. I knew that after their first convention appearance, I was like, I would be like, okay, these are real people.
Yeah.
They're not just actors on a call sheet that are going to be in this future Trek show. Like, seeing Sonequa Martin-Green, our new lead, she respects the hell out of this franchise and really seems to understand what the Trek ideals are about, what the show is about in its most deepest, most intellectual forms, as well as sort of what it can say about modern culture, how it's a mirror to society, how it's a journey to explore the human condition. I mean, all of these things, just like, you know, the things that really are the fundamentally at the heart of what we love about the show, like, she seems to really get it. In fact, so much so that someone asked her, they mentioned Nichelle Nichols, and they asked her about the sort of passing of the baton onto her as the lead of the show, and how she felt about that, and what responsibilities she felt. And Sonequa was crying when she was trying to get her answer out. She was saying, like, I promise I wouldn't cry. And she's like, I'm so sorry. And she kept, like, she was trying to get her answer out, and everyone was really silent, just like listening to her. And the things she was saying in between her, like, trying to gather herself was, you know, just like, I think, like, people are really gonna love this show, and, like, you know, I feel so grateful and honored to be a part of this. And it was just really, really moving. It wasn't fake at all. It was completely genuine.
It's cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was
everything
awesome.
She says is like, okay, she gets it. This
she
is
gets
amazing.
It. Yep.
Yeah. Everything you see from her sounds like she gets it. It's really impressive.
if I can interject, it there sometimes when people get the mantle of a franchise like this where they kind of act like they're better than it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to name names. But I was thinking about this recently when I saw Wonder Woman, and that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Huh.
I'm not sure what year.
Chris Pine. He's always acted like he's too good for to be.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, I thought you saw it for Wonder Woman specifically.
No. No. He was lucky to be there, right?
Yeah,
definitely. And he was lucky to be Captain Kirk, but he didn't seem to have this. I never sensed from the same kind of humility that our new lead evinces.
You're right. I don't think that comes from a lot of that cast, to be honest. Some of it too.
Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
And Carl Urban.
Simon Pegg does.
Quinto, maybe. Quinto seems to really get it.
I think he liked having a friendship with Leonard Nimoy. I'm not sure about the rest of it.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're digressing.
Yes.
So, yeah, everything from her has been fantastic. The other person, just to jump in on the whole who talks really excitedly and enthusiastically.
I know what you're going to say.
Do you? Well, I hope so. Is Anthony Rapp is amazing. He clearly is into it. Like,
oh yeah.
Like
big time.
When you look at our video, you know, your fantastic interview with him, which by the way, kudos, because like you said, you get like, I don't know, 30 seconds with these people, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's really nothing.
Yep.
I couldn't do it. I'd be like tongue tied and tripping over it. When you've got to, you know, you got to bang through.
Yeah, it's not easy.
That's why we don't send you, Matt.
Exactly. You don't want me there. It wouldn't be good.
Well, the other thing is you're not sure who's coming next because they kind of come down the line. And one person may finish earlier, so they like leapfrog. So you're never sure who you're going to get next. You have to keep a couple of questions in your mind and be like, hey, if it's them, I'm going to ask this. If it's them, I'm going to ask this. And I had to be adjusting my questions on the fly because the trailer came out, was shown in the panel in Ballroom 20 where Christine was live tweeting. Meanwhile, I'm at the press area without Wi-Fi or cell service because it's just a black hole there. So I hadn't seen the trailer. And then someone who did have service was like, oh, I can get it on my phone. And there were a bunch of us in the red carpet as like before the stars got to us. We're like watching it on his phone, like scrubbing through it to be like, okay, what happened in this trailer? Because, like, you know, we might have asked a question that had already been answered in the panel.
Right.
Guerrilla interviewing everybody.
Yeah, it was very much guerrilla journalism.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's how it gets done a lot, believe it or not. It was not just at a San Diego Comic-Con. A lot of that happens in real life all the time.
Oh, God, yeah, I'm sure. And, Brian, I'm sure you have, like, a million stories like that where it's just, like, insanity and you just do everything on the fly.
Yep.
Yeah. I kind of like that part about it. It was kind of fun and exhilarating.
Yeah, well, kudos because it looks amazing. Like you came off awesome, and as you know, everybody loved talking to you. I mean, it shows in the as we've seen, it shows in those videos too. They all like chatting with you.
Awesome,
which is awesome because you know
you did a great job, Kay.
Thank you.
Because you know how like it's just for them, it's a cattle call, and they just kind of answer some of the same questions again and again. So it's awesome that you get a good response from these guys, and they did, which is also kudos to them that they're still they're not jaded yet or anything. They still want to talk to people, so that's awesome.
Yeah, they were all like on a high, they were just psyched and just like so excited to be there that they were like, I'm talking about Star Trek. This is awesome.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yes, finally. Yeah. And speaking of Anthony Rapp, he was wearing, if you guys noticed, a Star Trek t-shirt. And Aaron, Aaron, when I talked to Aaron and Gretchen, who are the two showrunners, he was wearing a black shirt that just said Disco.
Disco.
That's right, he was.
That was great. That was good. Christine must have loved that Starfleet mom, because that's how she refers to Discovery, Disco.
Well, I've taken that now, too. I think a lot of, like, I've noticed in our Trek movie Dropbox, a lot of the Discovery folders, the new ones popping up are like Disco, this or that. Yeah. It was like Disco press conference files.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more fun than calling it DSC.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah, DSC is for when you write it, not when you say it. You know what I mean?
Right. When it's said, I think DSC is pronounced Disco.
Right. Exactly.
So how about that trailer, guys?
Oh man, the trailer, powerful stuff. Seriously, was really something. I spent a lot of that weekend starting to tear it apart and put it back together and look at it, along with a bunch of us. I think a lot of us did that. So it was really quite something. Actually, I actually really liked most, just about all of it, to tell you the truth.
It was gorgeous is the first thing I noticed.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Clearly the most expensive Star Trek series ever made. There's no question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, by far.
They're pouring a ton of money into it. So those rumors that we were hearing about it being a Game of Thrones level in terms of its resources is looks like it's pretty much on the money.
Seems legit.
At least for the first two episodes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of those questions we'll see is how that holds up, because they're definitely spending the money on the 2-hour pilot. We know that much.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you could see it even in the, like, you know, we didn't get to follow, I didn't get to follow up on this earlier, but like the props that Kayla took photographs of, those Klingon helmets and the costumes, the level of detail is feature level.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That's like feature level quality stuff that they're putting out.
Yes.
Like, it was very impressive.
That's
like
the stuff
that, that stuff looks good up close. Like, most TV props do not look that good up close.
No, exactly. Not at all. Well, so I'm hoping that means, this is a little technical, but as a little quick aside, we don't know a lot about the tech specs of what they're doing for the production, but that stuff is most definitely like 4K ready. That's like amazing level detail.
Everything we saw, all the costumes and the props were highly detailed.
Yes, yes. Goes back to that 3D printing. Very impressive.
Yeah, So getting back to the trailer, I thought it was gorgeous as well. I mean, talk about eye candy. My God.
Yeah, I loved the...
Every frame was lovingly cared for.
Yeah, the thing that I liked the best was the readouts you'd see on her spacesuit, right?
Yes, those were awesome.
Just the little her attention little to detail like that, which is shows so much care.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Kayla, what did you think?
I have to go back and watch it more still, but what I have seen of it so far, because I've seen it a couple times, but like I haven't gotten to sit down with it really.
Yeah, and it's very non-linear, so you have to kind of go through it and be like, okay, that jumped to this,
right?
That jumps back to that, you know.
And it's a long trailer, like a lot happens.
Yeah.
So you know what's funny about that is that it's actually not any longer than the May one. It's just much more action-packed.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Because we were discussing that when we were starting to do our breakdown of this, and everyone said, well, that's longer. And I went, no, actually, that's like almost exactly the same length. We just have more. Way more intense.
It seems like twice as long.
Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff that goes on. They show you.
Yeah, they pack a lot in.
They show you a heck of a lot more than they, you know, could or wanted to in May. So it's amazing. It's packed.
I don't know. It's hard for me to like pick. There's like a couple of moments that stand out, a couple of scenes, but like, yeah, it's just so much. Like we could do an entire show breaking down that trailer.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess we have some stuff, you know, on the site right now for people that want to go see.
Yes. And more coming with more detailed analysis, with more breakdowns and stuff like that. That's more character specific. So, instead of just, you know, talking about the trailer, we're actually going to break it out into what from this trailer, we just learned a lot more about Burnham. So there's an article coming about that, things like that. So yeah, keep watching TrekMovie.com.
That is a great takeaway in any event.
Of course.
Yes.
Always.
Very nice.
By the way, does anyone love Burnham as much as me? Because she's just
She's awesome.
Looks really cool.
Yeah
I like everything about her.
I have some issues with her background, but I like her.
Yeah, but I think the present, you know, the current Burnham, ignoring the background, I think is great. Like,
yes, the character, and she lights up the screen.
Oh yeah,
Sinequa, she's on the screen.
Yes.
Yeah, she's got star quality.
Yeah,
see, I never watched Walking Dead,
uh-huh.
So when she was announced for this show, I was like, who the hell is that?
Right. Yeah,
right.
Like, I had no idea.
Yep,
so I'm really getting my first exposure to her now, and I'm like, okay, I get it.
Yeah,
she's gonna be a star. You can tell. You can just tell by looking at her.
Yeah, same deal. Never watched The Walking Dead. In fact, the only thing I knew her from is she had guest starred on New Girl a couple times, and I'm like, oh yeah, that lady. Like, okay, yeah, no, she's awesome, very awesome. I see why people are drawn to her from in The Walking Dead.
Totally.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
and it seems like the way they're promoting Discovery is that it really heavily revolves around her, which is new for a Trek show.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And it's what Fuller has always said, even back, you know, a year and some ago. He said, no, it's really going to be this, you know, we didn't have a name yet, but he said, it's really going to be this second in command show. And
right.
boy,
right.
it looks like it. It hasn't changed from that.
Well, which, maybe that's...
Do we think it's going to be the second in command show because Captain Lucius Malfoy is a traitor?
No. No, he seems... Well, he does say that in those interviews we talk about, apparently he's kind of rough around the edges at one point. Mm. And also
he's got issues.
He's called a messed up guy, actually.
He's got issues.
So,
see, because the thing is...
We'll see.
It can't be her show if he's not antagonistic, right? That's like why...
I mean, I suppose.
That's like why Starfleet admirals tend to be evil or incompetent, right? It's because they have
or
to be.
Or he's just wallpaper be the and hero? It's about her.
He could be like a... I don't think he will be, but it would fit if he was like a mentor figure who's just like really hard on her to get the best of her. Yeah. I don't
like think... He seems very type of reserved.
Yeah, or I'm actually specifically thinking of Calista Flockhart's character in Supergirl.
Oh.
Who at first you kind of dislike, but then she ends up being like the best character in that show.
Mm. It's got some writing staff in common. You could be right in that sort of regard too.
Oh, do they? I didn't realize they did.
Ted worked on Supergirl.
Ted, yeah.
I didn't know that. He's even more awesome now.
Hmm. Yeah.
For people who don't know, Ted means Ted Sullivan.
Sorry, Ted Sullivan. He's a co-executive producer now.
Mm-hmm.
And writer on Discovery.
Yeah. Yep.
Very cool. Yeah.
Very active on Twitter.
Well, I think this is a good segue into our characters section of the show. So we're starting on Lorca, it sounds like. So
sure.
why don't we
so
just
let's
like,
talk about
him. I don't know that we learned that much about him compared to other people, but we did learn that he's quote unquote rough around the edges. He does an interview where he describes himself as a messed up guy. Mm-hmm. So I think the big question is what we're asking ourselves right now. Is he like a bad guy? Or like an opposition to Michael, or
it's hard to say, but he looks. I have to say, he didn't come off the way I expected at all. Like Jason Isaacs didn't. Like his performance is different than I expected from what we saw in the trailer. He seemed very kind of off, sort of out of it, almost like very reserved, very cold. Like he was just, you know, like not just just different. I actually expected him to be. I don't know what I expect. I actually thought he would use his accent, which is kind of a bummer. I don't like that he's doing an American accent.
Yeah,
I think it makes it weird. I think it makes it weird.
Yeah,
there's
no reason to do that.
That's right. There's absolutely no reason for that because
no, he's got a great voice.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
a great natural voice.
Right. Yeah. So something
he's
about that
specifically
really
trying to not sound like Lucius, right?
I guess so.
That could be it.
Maybe that's
that
what they maybe that's what they did. Is they went, wait, you're going to sound way too much like that guy from Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but it did. I have to say, the lack of accent threw me for one, and then two, just you know, we don't see a lot of him. In fact, not nearly enough to really make a good judgment call. But what little bit he speaks, it's sort of very reserved and very different than I expected. And now Isaacs has actually said, I'm trying to be very different than what you would expect. You know, a different kind of Starfleet captain than you're used to. So I guess he succeeded, but it's different. Yeah, don't know how I feel about him.
Same.
Yeah, it's too early, too hard to tell.
I'm on the fence. Mm-hmm. It's intriguing.
He does have
though.
The right look, though.
Yeah,
he does.
He's got that TOS era Starship Captain look to him.
Yeah.
As someone pointed out, everyone correctly has pointed sideburns too.
I was about to mention that.
Yep.
I was about to mention that.
That's the habit.
I noticed that when I was interviewing some of the people, I was like, sideburns, but I didn't say anything as they were talking and. You know, I'm just staring at them talking. I'm just like, nice sideburns.
It's important, man. That's an important detail, darn it.
Yep. They know
it's
which
one the
details
Kelvin,
they need.
It's one of the Kelvin movies have let slide.
Ah.
So, if you look. Some do, some don't. They've kind of let that get slippery.
Anything else on Captain Lorca?
He looks great in the uniform, too. I mean, everyone does.
He does.
That uniform is so good, but it struck me about him.
Yeah. Oh, he does talk about it. I think it was Isaac even said that he's already kind of doing the Picard maneuver and pulling his shirt down a little bit to make sure it looks crisp. I forget what interview it is, but there's one of the interviews that came out of Comic-Con when he says that.
He mentioned it, too. I think it might have been in the press conference. He said something about he had learned from, oh gosh, now I'm going to forget who it was. you know, one of the former captains, Patrick Stewart, maybe, had said something about, I think it might have been Patrick Stewart, that was like, you have to keep your uniform straight all the time.
Yes, that's it. That's the thing I'm thinking of.
And he was like, I hope it's not on screen all the time, because I guess he would try to, like, when they weren't filming, he would, like, straighten up his uniform.
Yeah. That's it. That's what he's talking about. Yeah, that's the anecdote I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
So at least off camera, he's doing the Picard maneuver and doing the tug. I imagine that thing rides up a little bit, just looking at how tailored it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we can't say too much about Lorca yet. We haven't really met him.
No.
Yep.
We can say a lot about some of the other people.
Yes.
Like, why don't we go with Cadet Tilly next?
Yes.
Okay.
You met her, right, Kayla?
Yes, I did, yeah. And I have to say that she has taken the biggest, you know, in my own mind, the biggest sort of journey. Her character has the biggest story arc, as far as I'm concerned at this moment, just of what I've learned about her. Because I went from knowing nothing about her to when I did the interview with Mary Wiseman, who plays her, it was like, I cannot wait to meet your character.
Oh.
She's like, because she is just a delight. She's super excited about this. And I asked, you know, so you're a cadet, but you're on the Discovery. Like, how does that work? Yeah, you know, where does your character fit in? And she explained that, yes, she's a cadet at the academy in her fourth year, but it's sort of like an internship, like an externship, right? She's out, like, working on the Discovery, like, for part of her training.
So she's kind of like an acting ensign.
She's like an acting ensign. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then she says she ends up being roommates with Michael Burnham at some point.
Yep. And we see that in the trailer.
And they're like, so there's, I asked her about this and she said that, yes, there's sort of a mentor relationship between her and Michael Burnham. And that she's also looks up to other people like Lieutenant Stamets, who she works with. She was saying that there's some project in engineering that they're working on and all this stuff. So, but she described herself as someone who's, like, very green, you know, wet behind the ears, super excited, just trying to do their... Mm. She said, I'm just out in there trying to do my best science and just, like, surrounded by all these amazing, brilliant people. And I was like, she just sounds so much like me. You know, it's like someone I can totally relate to. And Mary Wiseman was like, yeah, there's a lot of me, too, in this character. So nice. It's like a new kind of person. It's almost like... I think there's a lot of parallels to the character of Wesley, but... in a way that's, I think, a lot more relatable.
Yeah.
Yes, way less annoying.
Mm. Yeah, less just, like, awkward nerd. And there's nothing wrong with being awkward and nerdy. I think all of us are, but, you know, in some way.
He was poorly written was the problem. They made him just a jerk.
Now, to be fair, when people say bad stuff about Wesley, they're talking about Wesley from the first season. And everybody's written badly in the first season.
Yeah, the first season is terrible for most people.
Good point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. No. Wesley gets much better.
Much better.
I love Wes season two on. I mean, I was a young kid watching TNG. I was crazy about Wesley. I was like, this is my guy. Like, this is me, you know, like, right. Or who I want to be. So, yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. So I think she's definitely got a lot of that in her. Like, probably is going to be, like, a young but very talented and bright
person. But so also, hopefully, like, that inspires a lot of young people, especially young women, to be interested in, you know, STEM and all that.
Yeah, I hope so too.
What we want, you know?
I think that's awesome. I'm really excited about her character now.
It's also nice to see that, you know, fourth year cadets at Starfleet Academy actually, you know, work their way through the ranks and don't get handed the keys to the ship right away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yes, that's very true. And you know what's nice about this is there's that precedent of Academy people out on ships because, for example, in Wrath of Khan, we see that. Like, that's what they're doing, right?
Yeah, it's a training mission.
Exactly. And so, and then we also see things like Savick is, this is one of those weird things where they kind of muddle the rank thing. She's in the academy, but she's also like a lieutenant already, which is sort of confusing to me.
I never realized that.
Yeah. If you look, she has a rank already. So it's interesting. And they've never made that clear why, but that would be this same kind of scenario of like, hey, like you get to be on a fully fledged starship, even though you're still, you know, in your fourth year or whatever. So that totally fits with what we see, especially in the TOS era. We've seen that before. So that's pretty great. Nice consistency.
Yeah, I like that.
I think this naturally leads into one of her mentors then, which is Stamets. Before we get to the big one, just Burnham, because we know a lot more about Burnham. Let's talk about Stamets real quick. Because he's an interesting fellow.
Is it Stamets or Stamets?
I don't know, actually. Kayla, did he say his name out loud?
No. I don't think so. Wait, he did. Yes, he did. Because I think it's Stamets. Because he talked about a guy in real life who's...
Paul
Stamets, who's a mycologist, right. of studier of fungi, who's like a real life human who studies fungus. And they modeled their this character after this guy.
Well, and they literally gave him the same name.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which, how awesome is that? Like,
that's very cool. Yeah.
Real science. I also love that he has like an actual role, because forever it's always been there's a science officer. And it's like, well, what, you just do like all science specialty now?
Yeah.
Right.
And this also carries on a tradition of having one of the characters named after a real person.
Oh, like Geordi LaForge.
Geordi LaForge was named after a fan who I think he was
quadriplegic.
Not very good health.
Yeah.
Quadriplegic.
Yeah.
His name was George LaForge.
Right.
Who Gene Roddenberry named the first like honorary admiral in Starfleet at one of the early conventions. And I think Gene had fond memories of the guy. So when he was creating TNG, he named Geordi after him.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
This carries that on a little bit.
There was an actual bartender he named Guinan.
No way.
Texas Guinan. Yep. Yeah.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, that's a real person. Like, called me as a title, anyway. Texas Guinan. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Gene came up with that, too.
Cool.
So, yeah, so this fellow here, as we just said, is not just, you know, a general science officer. He's, as we know, very specific specialty. And I thought it was neat that Anthony Rapp is, rather, kind of spewed out some of the cool scientific, you know, lingo that he was, you know, memorizing as an actor at the at Comic-Con, which I thought was really cool. And it actually gives us a little hint about what's going on Discovery, just a little bit, when you put together the fact that Tilly says, you know, Mae Wiseman said that Tilly is working with Stamets in engineering. And to me, I went, wait, why are they in engineering?
Mm-hmm.
He does, you know, space fungus. Okay, so this little bit that he rattled off, and unfortunately, a lot of people, well, not unfortunately, but just a lot of people just went, oh, there he goes, saying some techno babble. And it's like, yes, but he just gave us an interesting clue.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says he works with a species of fungus, of like space-borne fungus, basically, that's made up of exotic matter found not only in our dimension, but also in a discrete subspace domain known as the mycelial network.
Ooh.
So these are some really funky mushrooms that exist also in subspace. So it's very interesting and makes one wonder, what are they doing with these in engineering?
Right. And they also said that the Anthony Rapp said in our interview that, and in other places, that his project, his astromycological project that he's doing, has a very important role to play in the plot of the show. And it's like very important for Discovery. So it's not just like, oh, he's randomly a fungus guy.
So to tie this into something Lorca says that a lot of people have already sort of tied together. So we'll see if this is true or not. But Lorca, as we know, says kind of a very vague kind of thing in the trailer where he goes, oh, you're making a new way to fly or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And
we see Michael Burnham's character standing in front of what looks like some giant trees or something.
Yeah, a giant fungus like chain or something.
Yeah.
So a lot of fan stuff out there says that perhaps the Discovery is not powered so much by dilithium, but by this subspace fungus, which is what he means by a new way to fly.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. This is all conjecture, but interesting.
Which would beg the question.
Yes.
Is this actually the prime timeline?
Right. Yeah, it opens up a lot of questions of like,
is this actually 10 years before the original series? I mean, what is this?
Yeah.
Right. Because which is the way to go.
That's one of the challenges with any prequel is how do you do something new when in universe it will have already been done, right?
Well, or for in universe, we keep using dilithium. So this couldn't be the amazing breakthrough that it appears to be, right? Because we know they keep using dilithium.
But there could be a reason that it's maybe not better than dilithium in general, but it's better than dilithium for a specific purpose. Like, there are definitely ways to retcon this to fit.
Oh, definitely. We can definitely make this fit somehow.
Okay, here's the other thing I want to interject briefly, and this may be stretching, right? But in the episode Sarek, which has been on my mind because, Brian, you mentioned it last episode. So there's this alien species that Sarek is working with called the Lagerans, who, like... It's like his most important mission ever, but we've never heard of these people before or since. and there are these aliens who live in according to Memory Alpha,
bath.
A pool of thick swirling ooze. And so maybe it's connected to that species in some way.
That's a nice little, like, maybe we can connect all the dots kind of thing. Yeah.
Maybe it's stretching a little too far, but that would be kind of cool.
That is such a stretch, but if it comes true, I'm just going to be like, dude, that was amazing.
Yeah, maybe. Thank you. We'll just kind of give Jared major props.
I look forward to that. Because that will retroactively add some significance to this species that's so important at Sarek's last mission, but we'd never heard of them otherwise.
And Sarek is in Discovery.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Boom. Full circle, everybody.
Boom. Mic drop.
Yeah. So the other cool thing that we found out about Stamets, because, well, we knew that he was going to be the openly gay character. But the nice part is we also now know, A, another cast member, because he was able to break that news at Comic-Con. And B, we also now know that it's his boyfriend. And so his boyfriend is played by Wilson Cruz, who, he's in all kinds of stuff, and of course was also partly in Rent. But at least to me, because I was a kid in the 90s, I remember him from my so-called life. Like, that's who he is. He's Ricky to me. Oh, it always will be.
Huh.
So I'm like, oh, that's Ricky from My So-Called Life. And so he's going to be Dr. Hugh Culber, who's one of the doctors, you know, a normal medical doctor, like, on board Discovery. And that's Stamets' boyfriend.
Yay.
So that's cool. So we got a little new knowledge dropped on us about Stamets and his personal life, which is kind of cool. Because we've been wondering, well, okay, he's out. You know, he's openly gay. Now what? Right. You know, like, do we see his relationships or don't we? So, cool. That's Stamets. That's what we know about him so far.
Okay. Who else do we get?
There's one other small character. Well, I mean, I don't know how small he actually is, but we didn't know anything about him. We learned a little bit about him. And that's Tyler.
Right.
Yep.
And I think we literally knew nothing about him before.
Yes, this weekend. We knew absolutely nothing. You're right.
And he revealed to us that he is come upon as a prisoner of war. I think he made it sound like the Discovery crew kind of come upon him, or he's found by them, or somehow integrated into them. But he was a POW, and so his character will deal with that issue of having been a prisoner of war and those issues of things like PTSD. So it's, you know, something very Which relevant cool. to today.
Yeah, that's very cool. Mm-hmm. It makes you, so then of course the question is, what war was he a prisoner of?
Yeah.
And I assume it's only because we know this is a very Klingon heavy first season arc. I assume it must be some sort of previous Klingon skirmish, you know, of some sort, but I don't know. Like, I don't know what else it would be.
Well, we also learned, speaking of war, that the theme of war is going to carry very heavily in the show. But it's, which I was disappointed with at first, but
so have I.
It gives me pause. Let's say
yes,
it does to me too. Because honestly, this, and I'm going to get flack from this group for this, but one of the reasons that DS9 is not my favorite show is because of how heavily it deals with war, especially later.
Later on.
When it, you know, I don't care about war strategy, honestly. I care more about the people. When people are like, oh, they designed this new ship to, like, fight these people. And, you know, but after talking to particularly Gretchen and Aaron and Heather Caden, the showrunners and executive producers, they talked about it more in the thread of this, okay, they're at war. So there's a lot of things surrounding that plot point. But the show is more about understanding the other and understanding yourself in order to understand the other. And like in fact, I think it was Aaron who said, you know, the Klingons aren't quote unquote the Russians anymore. They're not just the enemy. You know, they're someone to be understood instead of just mustache twirling. You know, these guys we're at war with them.
I'm sorry, I can't jump on that enough at how grossly that mischaracterizes the franchise, if that's the sentiment that they're convincing.
I have to agree.
I mean, from the very first time we see the Klingons in Errand of Mercy, I mean, like, it's one of the quintessential moments of the franchise is when Kirk realizes he's arguing with the Organians in favor of the right to make war just as much as Kor is, right? And then in Private Little War, like, Kirk realizes that he and the Klingons are doing the exact same thing. And then in Day of the Dove, the whole idea there is, we're not supposed to be fighting with each other. And there's even that moment where and I can't remember her name, Kang's wife, or science officer, I can't remember.
I think it's Mara or something.
Thank you.
Mara,
She says, we've heard of all the horrible things you guys do to prisoners of war. And we're like, wait, no, that's what we heard about you guys. And so the whole idea that the Russians are our enemies, but they're just the same as us, is something that was through the whole first 25 years of the franchise up until, and then Undiscovered Country, to use our phrase, hangs a lantern on it beautifully. So
yes.
So the idea of the Klingons or the Russians, and that makes them the bad guys, is horribly wrong.
Yeah. I could not have possibly said that better.
I don't think that's what they're saying.
I may have mischaracterized the way he said that, because he said that the Klingons are not the Russians anymore and spoke more about sort of issues that you see everywhere instead of categorizing them as, you know what I mean? So I think, I don't know. I took away from it that they were less in a box in terms of like what, if they're not supposed to represent a certain population of people.
Which to be fair, you know, given I don't understand what our relationship with the Russians is anyway. And the Klingons, the Klingons have been around for so long. They have to be their own thing at this point. Right. So that part I would agree with.
But I think, you know, I may have put a connection there where there wasn't between the, they're not just the enemy and they're not the Russians.
Okay.
At least, I didn't take away that he meant that they had been in the past.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he doesn't actually say that. Like, I'm looking at the quotes right now. Okay. That's not actually right. Racist. So it's all okay. Right.
Okay.
But he does say they're not just the enemy, which that's what I liked about it. And I guess I got into him characterizing what they're about when he said they're not just the Russians. But they're not, he said they're not just the enemy, meaning, like, I think for all of the quote-unquote bad guys in the show, it's not just an enemy to fight against.
But haven't we covered that ground with the Klingons already? Like, I feel like we've been here before.
I'm not so sure, because they've always been the Cold War version of the Klingons, haven't they? This is a little bit different.
That to me, that's splitting hairs.
You think so?
Yeah. I agree.
All right.
Like, to me, I feel like, I to be honest with you, I am disappointed the Klingons are this heavily involved in this thing.
Yeah, well, me too. Yeah. I think they should have done something different entirely.
Yeah, and I've been saying this for a little while now, just because the more I think about it, I agree with that to a degree, which is like, this better be the season one arc, and then we better move on. I do not want the season arc. Yes. I do not want, like it's fine, this is a backdrop. Because remember, this is the fabled, in theory, this is the fabled Klingon War that's been talked about here and there throughout the franchise, right? This is apparently it. This is like what Fuller was intending. Okay, so that happens. But we also know that they basically go back to being, you know, the Klingons that have their own territory and only occasionally skirmish with the Federation, like we see in TOS, right? I don't want this to become a three season long slog through Klingon war, right? I don't want it. I'm over it. I don't want it. If this is the arc of season one, okay, fine. But please don't do that for three more seasons. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hoping they don't. I'm hoping that they sort of go, okay, since we can do a serialized whole season, that they feel that they've got that out of their system, right? That they've done this big story across, well, now 15 episodes. Maybe that they can, you know, feel free to start fresh. as I was saying this to one of our other Trek movie staff, Laura, I said, the name of the show is Discovery. They better freaking discover stuff at some point.
Yeah, new life and new civilizations, please.
You know, here's what I think about that. So I think that, because it's funny you say that, because Gretchen said, it's quote, I quote her in saying, it's called Discovery for a reason.
Right.
But I think the discovery she was talking about is a sort of internal discovery.
Sure. Self-discovery.
Which is cool.
But that's Trek Burnham's is like about
internal discovery.
More than discovering strange new worlds. It's about people.
Sure. But the slogging through a backdrop of war gets old. So as much as I like that, there's this flip side, which is like, that's cool. You think it's all internal, but what else is going on in the universe kind of matters too.
Oh, I see what your point. Yeah, for sure.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I meant too. Yeah. Seek out new life, new civilization. Right. You know, that kind
of
thing.
Yeah. Not just the hollow besides promise of that, but legit, like, can we move on now from...
Yes.
Yeah.
I just hope it's as optimistic as it should be.
That's the worry, is that it gets this just mired in some, you know, depressing Klingon war.
Yeah,
that shouldn't
I worry about that a lot.
Yeah,
actually,
I worry about that. And this is the space
if that happens, where the Orville is going to beat Discovery in the minds of fans.
Yes, it's really funny to see the just a tangent on that. It's really funny to see the sort of almost 50-50 split on how people think about the Orville, because there's a whole lot of people who go, Discovery looks like a really dark slog through shitty war stuff.
Yeah.
I think I want, you know, and they go, I think, at least on the surface, they're instantly drawn then to the Orville as a counterpoint to that. And then there are other people who go, well, what is this? Like, it's clearly a parody. It's got a lot of poop jokes. Like, what is this? Why could, you know, how could you be attracted to this as a Trek fan? And it's really funny to see the split. And then, of course, there's people in the middle, like a lot, I think most of us, who want to watch them both and enjoy both and just see what happens.
Yeah, of course.
Yep.
Two things can both be good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we know, like, we have to have a sense of humor about being Trekkies. Hello, Galaxy Quest, which most people love, right? And so, hey, there's room for the Orville to kind of poke fun at this, 24th century version of Trek. I mean, yes, it's in the 25th, but it's making fun of the TNG era kind of vibe, at least stylistically, it certainly is. And that's okay. I'm fine with that. I don't mind a parody of TNG. I like TNG, and I'm a big boy. I can accept a parody of it, you know?
Well, and it's a parody from somebody who loves it as much as we do.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what I think people who really kind of diss it forget, is Seth actually loves this stuff. He, in fact, we'll keep tangenting for a minute. At the press conference for the Orville, he literally says, "This is why I got into TV. I've wanted to make a show like this the entire time I tried to get my foot in the door, basically." And he says something to that effect, actually at the press conference.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what, and this is the thing that, like, we've talked about this a little bit, even on this own podcast when we were talking about his character Rivers and, you know, coming on, that he's always been a fan. And he's always been interested in doing this. And, you know, he's writing, he's basically just, he can do no wrong in Fox's eyes with, you know, the Family Guy kind of franchise, we'll call it, you know,
with how much money he's made them.
Right. So he can just go, hey, guess what? I've made you guys tons of money. Now it's time for me to do a pet project and you're going to do it for me. And cool. Kudos to him. It's amazing to be in the industry and have that kind of clout. You just go, guess what? I get a pet project. You know, the only other guy that I can think of that gets to do stuff like that on the movie side is people like Spielberg and, now I'm failing. You know, Inception. Shit. What's his name?
Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan.
Thank you. The other person that can really get to do this is people like Spielberg and Christopher Nolan. Because, you know, Nolan gets to do that cool thing where he basically does kind of one studio movie. And then in turn, he gets to do his own project. Like, you can watch it flip-flop back and forth. He gets to do a Dark Knight Rises or whatever, and then they let him, you know, do like Inception. Like, as a reward for doing,
or Dunkirk,
or Dunkirk, right? Exactly. To use the most recent example, is Dunkirk, and that's because, you know, he kind of goes, okay, I'll make, you know, one that's a little more friendly to the average person, and then I get a passion project because you like me and I do and I deliver. So you guys get to reward me.
And the thing about Seth MacFarlane above and beyond that is he just churns out a lot of content, right? So
yeah, he does, because you know, at one point he had technically at one point he had three shows spun off of Family Guy.
Yeah.
Well, not one's not technically a spinoff, but, you know, related somehow to Family Guy. He doesn't anymore, it's two. But at one point he actually had a little empire of three different you know, Seth MacFarlane comedies going.
Which was absurdly too much.
He is worth a lot of money to News Corp. I'm sure. A lot.
Yeah, yeah. So kudos to him that he is in a position to do this, you know? Anyway, we've digressed
a
bit.
Yeah. So, that looks like it's a little more of a bright, shiny, TNG, Roddenberry-esque version of the future.
I have to say, and this is another thing, I knew the war thing was going to ruffle feathers because it ruffled mine. And something else, as much praise as I've been giving Sonequa Martin-Green, she had one particular quote that I'm like, ooh, people aren't going to like that. She said, and I won't quote her exactly, but pretty close. Something like, all good television is gritty because real life is gritty.
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
She's been saying that gritty keyword in a number of interviews for months now, and every time she says it, people bristle and they go, "Yes, but it's Trek." You know, wait a minute.
Well, someone asked the question too. Was her? She was responding to a question about her transition from such a gritty show like The Walking Dead, which is like people eating each other's faces and like
and then she's like, she's like, "It's not that different. It's still pretty gritty." And you're like, "Whoa, what?"
I want to believe Michael.
Yes.
I want to believe that she means that there are certain fundamental elements in the storytelling, which is true.
Yeah, you know, I think she's speaking of her own character, basically.
But when she said all good television is gritty because real life is gritty, I was like, yes and no.
No, just no.
No, yeah. Well, I don't know, because if by gritty she just means like conflict and
life sucks and has ups and downs.
Sure,
right. It can't all be like everyone's happy all the time and everything's great.
Which is something that we have complained about TNG, to be fair.
TNG, like, there has to be drama to move the story forward. Like, someone's unhappy for a bit and then they get happy again, right? So
sure,
you know, as bright as TNG was, it's not completely without conflict, because there wouldn't be a story.
Then there's no story.
People drinking tea,
right?
So if that's so if that's what she meant,
is it hot in Earl Grey?
It would be hot in Earl Grey, obviously.
Yes. Anyway,
but yeah, and then I'm behind it. But I admit that I'm just, that's a very hopeful, optimistic, glass half full look at that statement. And we just won't know until we see it. But I smiled when she said it, because I was like, damn girl, like, you're like, that's gonna piss some people off.
But I don't think she knows. She doesn't know that, though.
Yeah, I think she's trying to speak really like positively into her. It just means, you know, very real and to her character or whatever. And but we'll see. It's like you said, I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
The other thing is, when I hear words used frequently in the context of the same project, whether it's gritty or immersive or whatever, my mind goes to like the whiteboard and the working room for the marketers who've come up with, these are the three
talking
words that have tested the best.
Yes.
These are the words
on that note, home. The marketing note that's really ridiculous is they keep saying things about the universe and it's universe changing. Wish they'd stop that.
Okay, but we've been over this.
I know, but it still bothers
it
me.
It could be, though. It could.
No.
Because
then you get into weird, like, multiverse crap, which we don't want to get into. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
I think it
can
another
be Kelvinverse
thing? Like, okay. Yeah.
Well, no.
They were saying...
It'll be like the old school DC universe, like Earth 1, Earth 2.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Or like The Flash, yeah.
Yeah, it's like The Flash, right?
We don't want
Infinite
that.
Crisis on Trek.
Right, exactly. Crisis on multiple enterprises. You know, it's like, no.
Yeah, we don't want that for sure. There's already too many universes, but...
Yeah. Yes, there
is. But I don't know. I am not bothered at all by that, because I think... I will be if it ends up that you were right, Matt, which you probably are, when they were just misusing the word universe.
But we're misusing it, and it bothers me.
I can definitely... I'm not sure. I haven't seen all the evidence yet, so I'm reserving judgment.
You're reserving judgment.
Let's just say I'm guessing, knowing the marketing kind of PR types, that this is probably what that is. But we'll see.
Well, those press conferences and that panel was loaded with PR speak.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what kind of
stuff?
They were given. They were just given keyword. You just hear the gritty stuff. Like, they just repeat a lot of the same things over and over.
Don't you think, Brian?
Yeah, because,
it's,
you know.
Don't you think, Brian, it's because they're hardly allowed to say anything? So they're like,
yeah,
okay, what can we say?
Yeah,
so
but
they have to have a script.
Yeah, but I also think they're being told to say things.
Right. They're like, look, you can't really say much, but here's what you can say. You know.
Yeah, here are your talking points. Right. Go crazy. Hmm.
Which
is understandable.
Yeah,
which is understandable.
It is understandable, but man, you're right. It's definitely spoon feeding the same kind of.
Yeah, you get kind of boilerplate responses and stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
It's too bad.
Kayla, if you rewatch those Nerd Crew videos from Red Letter Media, they do a really good job of making fun of those kind of talking points, and especially in the context of Star Wars. And the one they use over and over again is vistas. So you can tell because Star Wars
vistas.
Always has new vistas.
Nice. So, what a good buzzword.
Yeah.
It's right up there with Paradigms.
You take that back, sir. Don't you befoul this sacred space
of Paradigms. Oh, the buzzwords. The buzzwords. No. But yeah.
I would like to circle back to the tone again. Yeah, if this is going to be a whole season of Star Trek at war, I guess I could deal with it as much as I'm not thrilled with the idea. But I do not want to sit through 15 hours of darkness.
Right.
Like, the world is screwed up enough right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the reasons I like Star Trek is because it gets me away from the world.
Yeah.
If I'm going to see a little too... I'm going to enter a world that's just as bad as the one that I'm in now, why am I watching?
I agree. Right.
Yeah.
So, but hopefully, I don't want to presume that that's what's going to be the case.
No, I sincerely really hope that's just simply a backdrop to a lot of interesting stories, and it's an arc that kind of, you know, is in the background and pops up and affects things, but isn't the, you know, the story, right? It's just, it's a background, a backdrop for other adventures. Yeah. That's what I hope. Sincerely hope
that. Yeah. Yeah, like it becomes the overarching story arc of the season, but it's not everything.
Right. And I believe Fuller, now that Fuller's in charge anymore, but I believe he kind of hinted at that early on, that, look, there's going to be this overarching thing, but don't worry, there will be, like, interesting kind of standalone stories along the way as well.
Which would be great. That would be wonderful.
Because that's really how it should work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. So what's up? I just hope they don't blow it.
That, boy, everyone wants that. CBS is hoping they don't blow it.
Yeah.
You know, like...
We're hoping they don't blow it.
We're hoping,
everyone's rooting for you guys.
The entire all-access division is really hoping they don't blow it, you know?
Yeah. That's where the real pressure is.
I am nervous, though, guys. I'm not going to lie to you.
Which part? All of it or what?
All of it.
Yeah.
Well, let's... Before we get into our... Because it would be... I think it'd be nice to wrap up this podcast with sort of our feelings, right, on what we've learned over the last week or so. But we still haven't talked about Michael Burnham.
Yes, because she's the most important person.
Yes,
let's
circle back. Yeah, we got to get back to Michael Burnham.
She's very important.
We saved her for last, and then we almost forgot about her.
I know. We're trying to save the best for last.
We got sidetracked. We got sidetracked.
So we learned this week that Michael Burnham is the adoptive daughter of Sarek and Amanda, so a.k.a. the adoptive sister of Spock.
Yep.
Right. So that's huge. What do you guys think when you first heard that?
My question is, where is Cybok, right? That's what the fans want to see. They want to see Cybok come back.
What?
Are you sure, Jared? Are you sure?
Jared's like by fans he means fan, and by that he means Jared.
He means himself. Yeah. Himself.
I've been pushing to do our Final Frontier episode for a long time, and all this horrible news keeps coming in the way, so we can't talk about a 30-year-old movie.
I had the reaction I had in 1989 when I heard about Cybok. I rolled my eyes.
Yeah, I agree.
I was like, really? And as soon as like the trailer came out and then they were talking about it at the presser and everything, a friend of mine texted me and he goes, wasn't this a sketchy idea in 1989?
Yeah.
Why are they doubling down on it now?
I don't know why they felt they had to have some kind of connection to Spock. I think she could have been raised on Vulcan and not have ever met Spock, and or maybe knew him because she knew Sarek, apparently. Like, I would have been happy with that. I don't think I'm not like upset that she's the adopted daughter. I think my reaction was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Okay.
Yeah. She could also just be his protege, right? It doesn't need
that's
to be
what
family.
I was thinking. Yeah, right. Yeah, totally.
And that would totally be fine. And it would, by the way, not piss off canon, you know, fiends either.
Yeah.
If she was just his protege.
Although, does it actually violate canon?
No, because we never heard either way.
Right.
But it's just one of those like, oh, surprise, you've never heard either way, and now you know. You know, like...
Yeah, I don't know. I do find it odd, though, that, like... granted, Spock didn't necessarily have to mention her. Spock was very private. I mean, Kirk didn't even know Sarek and Amanda existed until Journey to Babel. Like, he had no idea. But I would think that if Spock grew up with a human... sister of some kind, he would not be as utterly ignorant about human customs as he is.
Yeah. Well, let's think about this. So what's the age difference between
roughly the same age. She might be a little older.
Yeah,
than
we were just a couple through. Years. She's probably like 5 years older at most.
Well, how old is Spock when we meet him, you know, on the Enterprise?
Well, maybe 35, 36.
Yeah, he's supposed to be in his 30s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe he was supposed to be older. He just looks younger because Vulcans.
No, he's like 2 or 3 years older than Kirk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is his first, like, he's still pretty green in that sense.
So
he's not. Green.
So well during the time of Discovery, he would have been about mid-20s.
Yes.
And she's about.
And so is
late,
she.
She's like late 20s, right?
She's like late 20s, right?
So she's maybe a few
Spock
years
is already on the. Spock is already on the Enterprise.
Right. Right. At this point, he'd be serving under
Captain Pike.
Yeah. So yeah, in theory, like, so one of our, you know, staffers, one of our friends, Aaron, who is a big animated series guy, started to do the math, and he goes, "Hey, so in yesteryear, she should have been there at his house, or just about, you know, like that's about the time. Actually, no, yes, because that's young Spock at like 8 or something." So
7 or 8.
Yeah. So in theory, she was adopted like by them and they're already.
But
so,
how do we know when she was, how old she was when she was adopted?
Well, we can see that she's a really little kid in the trailer.
Yeah.
We see this injured little kid who's probably 5.
Yeah, but maybe she's not adopted yet. Just saying.
Well, Sarah clearly rescues her in the trailer. I have to say, you can see him come find her as a battered little kid. In a bombed out area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it kind of definitively, you know.
Maybe she was at like summer camp.
Yeah, Vulcan summer camp, dude.
Yeah.
Sweet.
She was at that little training bubble place that we see
the little bubbles.
That we see in the movies.
Exactly.
The Kelvin
and the upside down building hanging from a rock face.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, anyway. So yeah, that whole part is a little like, And of course, in the interviews with Kurtzman, like he even says, I found this to be sort of funny and glib, and I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, we know it's not totally canon, quote unquote, be patient with us. And I'm like,
That was not a good thing to say.
Yeah, that seemed pretty bitchy almost.
I did
and I'm
not
like,
hear
what
that
do you
comment.
Mean, oh no, he goes, yeah, be patient
with us. Oh no, he said it. No, he said it.
It was all over our stuff, and I'm like, what exactly we're supposed to be patient about? Because you're either sort of fudging canon or you're not. Like, what is it? Because
we don't forgive that.
Don't tell us you've got people sitting in the room screaming at you about canon if you're going to ignore it.
Right. So as we know, this is a very kind of gray area that maybe they're not ignoring it because Spock never talked about it. But yeah, it's pretty. Like,
they better retcon everything into canon.
We'll see. I actually kind of wish they wouldn't try too hard and they just, you know, sort of let us make this, forgive them for their sins, and then move on. Because she's an interesting character otherwise, you know?
Yeah, no, I like the character. No, I just mean,
let's not try too hard to retcon her. Let's just move on.
No, I agree. You know? I agree. No, I like the character. I just wish they had come up with something a little more original.
I think there's nothing wrong with having Sarek involved. But it's like, Jared, you were saying, why isn't she his protege then?
Yeah.
Why does it have to be this thing where she was rescued at like the age of 5 and taken, you know, taken into their home? Because that's where it gets dicey. She can't be taken.
It can just be like work placement, like, what's her name?
Work placement at 5? Yeah.
Like Juno's character in Inception, right? How she's just Michael Caine's protege at incepting people.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Incepting people. I like it.
Yeah, I'm wondering if her origin is actually taken. I just had this realization right now. I wonder if her origin was taken from a DC comic. About Savick's origin.
Oh.
Oh, no kidding.
Tell,
of course. Totally, totally.
In
about that.
One of the early DC comic Star Treks, they get into this whole thing about where Savick came from. And in their version of it, Spock is on some sort of assignment, and not even necessarily on the Enterprise at the time, on this planet that I think had been badly destroyed or something or other. And he finds Savick as a child, like wild. She's like this wild kid, you know, like almost like a feral cat almost. You know what I mean? Like, and he captures her or whatever and realizes, you know, that, you know what I'm talking about. She's just very, she's been out in the street for too long. She's messed up kid.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but I'm just imagining her like snarling.
Well, because remember, even in Wrath of Khan, until they sort of just cut this line, she's half Romulan originally.
Yeah.
Right. Savick is half Romulan. So they find her, Spock finds her, captures her, And because he can't obviously raise her on a starship or anything else, he brings her to Sarek and Amanda. And they raise her.
Right. So there you go. Somebody's
so
been
that's,
reading
I'm
their
wondering
DC
if
comics.
Somebody's just... Yeah, yeah, somebody was reading their DC comics. It could be... Look, it could be a complete coincidence, but it just literally popped into my head now. Like, wait a second. I wonder if that's where they got it from.
Yeah, I got a feeling people were probably combing all kinds of material. Sure. You know? So it could be. It really could be that they thought... Got inspired by that.
Yeah. So anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there.
Just to backcheck, Burnham is fully human, even though we're talking about Vulcans. Just to be clear, everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, the other thing that we sort of learned about her is that she has a quote-unquote fall from grace.
What?
Oh, yes. So if you can piece... So I'm... Since I'm the guy who's been reverse engineering this trailer...
Yep.
I can tell you that we can actually see a lot of pieces of this start to come together between the first and the second trailers. We don't know the exact ordering of everything, but you can start to put together a whole lot of what goes on the Shenzhou. Mm-hmm.
Right, like you see she's with Michelle Yeoh's character. Mm-hmm. And we like from the first trailer, and she's like, oh, I think it's time that you got your own command or something, blah, blah, blah. And yep. Obviously she's a mentor. And I think it's fair to say at this point that everyone agrees that Yeoh is basically a dead captain walking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
think she makes
she's a red shirt. Total red shirt.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. I think she dies early. So, you know, so they're together. It's just her mentor, blah, blah, blah. She's doing great. Yeoh dies, and something goes down, and Michael Burnham has to make some kind of decision that does it start a war or affect a war, or it affects the universe, as Matt loves to say. but she has to make
Galaxy.
Some kind of big decision, and she does something... That probably initiates her fall from grace, quote unquote. And she also ends up rooming with a cadet. So does she get some kind of a demotion?
Some kind of demotion.
Or...
Well, if you want what, you know, the guy who's been obsessing over this, if you want me to go through this. This basically teases an article that's forthcoming, by the way, folks. So tune back in to read the full article. So what we can sort of assemble so far is that remember that she goes off in that EV suit, the cool EV suit.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to see up close in Comic-Con,
yeah.
Which is really cool. Very cool. Also 3D printed. That's cool. So she goes off in that. And remember, even from the first trailer, she seems to be kind of out on her own looking for this unknown Klingon object. So thanks to the art exhibit, we know that what she's looking for is called the Obelisk. And that's some fancy, you know, ancient Klingon object that the Torchbearer, who we think is Tecumva, we're pretty sure that's, he's the Torchbearer, which is the cool armored guy that she fights in the first trailer. That's the Torchbearer. We saw the really sweet, again, 3D printed, most of it, suit at Comic-Con. So we think that she probably, out of curiosity, interrupts an ancient Klingon ritual. Which doesn't go over so well with these Klingons, that she interrupted them out of her own pure curiosity. This is mostly conjecture, but you can kind of piece this together from the trailer. In fact, in the second trailer, you can see her floating totally unconscious with her faceplate busted. So it does not go well for her. we don't know exactly when that choice that gets her in real trouble goes down. But remember in trailer one, there's a whole bunch of intense talking and almost yelling between her and Captain Georgiou. That happens over who should fire first. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in that midst of stuff, it's pretty clear she gets thrown in the brig. There's a screen. There's definitely her being escorted like by two security officers in the new trailer. And she's in the brig, which is very clearly in the new trailer. Like she gets in the can. So something goes really wrong because the Klingons show up in force, not just the one ship. But Tecumva, we see tons of Klingon ships like warping in, and they just pummel the poor Shenzhou. We can see that in this new trailer. And so, for whatever reason, the Shenzhou, I mean, it's blown almost to pieces. It's actually somewhat whole, but a whole chunk of it is missing. We see escape pods jettison too. So, I mean, they abandoned the Shenzhou. We know that. And then, if you kind of piece things linearly together, because it's very non-linear, so it's very hard to piece back together. But in trying to piece it all back together, her hairstyle changes. So we know that there's a time gap.
I noticed that too.
Yeah. So there's a time gap. And one of the first scenes of Lorca is him talking to her through a force field, because you can see her reflection bouncing off of it. So that may be because she just got, you know, serving some time for whatever she did to disobey orders. Whatever she did, that's this big universe galaxy affecting thing. She's either court-martialed, we don't know, or at the very least, like, you know, kind of like Tom Paris went and got, you know, served time for like 30 days.
30 days.
Yeah. Got demoted. Right.
So she, it's, we can see her in what's pretty clearly like a civilian outfit. Like she's got a yellow, kind of a mustardy yellow shirt with a very, with a normal collar, not an off-center collar, in a few screenshots. And one of them is when she's rooming with Tilly. So it sure seems like she's gotten herself busted out of the service, at least for a while, or is, you know, on some kind of suspension, whatever. And so she's just wearing this, you know, a regular shirt, like a regular dress shirt. So it sure seems like she really does have this fall from grace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when she rooms with Tilly, I think that goes back to, wait, what's this commander doing with a cadet? Well, the answer is, at least at this point in time, she doesn't have a rank. So guess what? Huh. You bunk with the cadet.
Yeah. She's lucky that, she's not in the brig, mister.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think, now again, a lot of this is sort of inference and, you know, a little bit of guesswork, but a lot of it's just there on the page, as they say, on the video, as they say. If you kind of assemble it all together, you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know, you know, still what her big change is, because of course they're not, you know, her big universe affecting thing that she does is, because of course they're not going to give that away, but we can kind of see the sort of pre post of that, sort of the, you know, pre sort of decision, whatever she does, the EV thing, and then the aftermath, which is like a whole bunch of shit goes down with the Klingons because of whatever is going on, probably because of her decision, or her decision and somehow worsens it anyway. So yeah, Lorca, when he first talks to her, most of the footage of Lorca talking to her is her in that yellow shirt, in fact, because I don't believe she's got a rank, you know, she's somehow suspended or whatever. And the only time we see her back in a uniform, well, ignoring the tactical uniform, because they give her a tactical uniform for a mission, but that's just because everyone gets a tactical uniform. It's not, you know, necessarily because she's legit again in Starfleet. But we know at the end, of course, she comes back and is somehow proven herself worthy, because at the end, she's got a new uniform, and it is new because there's a nice press shot from CBS of her later with the new hairstyle, so mm-hmm. we know it's later.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in silver now, not gold. So her path has changed. She's not in the command division anymore. Now she's a science officer.
Oh,
one of the cool things this does to that makes her a science officer who is second in command, like somebody else we know.
Ooh.
Also, I was told that her background is in science. I can't remember which. I think this is in one of the red carpet interviews, if I remember correctly.
Oh, I don't remember that. Is it?
Is or it isn't?
I think it is. If not, it might be a conversation I had off screen.
Interesting.
Off camera, but I was told that her background is in science.
Oh, interesting.
Cool. So she comes.
I guess
that
would make sense because she went to the Vulcan Science Academy, so that would make sense.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But for whatever reason, her first path, you know, is actually on the command path, not the sciences path. And so whenever she's, you know, proven herself or whatever and officially gets to stay on Discovery instead of just being what I'm supposing is a civilian advisor sort of position. Remember, this is a thing that we've seen on Star Trek before. The one person that I think of a lot is Ro. Remember, she's brought back from a prison camp, technically. You know, well, prison colony, not a camp. That makes it sound like it's Bajoran. She was serving time for, you know, that whatever she did wrong that they always hint at. And they give her a temporary commission as an advisor for the Bajoran situation.
Well, isn't that like,
Picard is like,
when we first meet Tom Paris, he's like in jail.
Same deal.
Yeah.
And they're like, we
same
need
deal.
You because you're the best.
Right. Same deal. So it looks to me like we actually have a repetition of that theme where Lorca comes to her.
Yeah,
and
I could totally see that.
Look, I mean, he, you know, there's that cool dramatic moment where he says, you helped start a war. Don't you want to help me end it? And he's talking to her in her civilian, you know, yellow shirt. So she's clearly, at least at this point in time, she's suspended or whatever. So, you know, he's coming to her and saying, look, you got in the thick of this. You know something about this. You started it, basically.
Yeah. And then that gives her like a redemption arc type of thing.
Exactly. So however it happens, she's redeemed at some point towards the end of, I assume, hour two of our pilot. And she becomes fully fledged, you know, Starfleet officer again. But now she's a science officer, not on the command track. For whatever it's worth, because as we know, that doesn't mean much or anything. You could be second in command in the sciences division. That's just your division. But
right.
The point is, it signifies a change, which she used to be in the command track. And life dealt her a different, you know, hand. She's now on the sciences track.
Well, it could have been a thing of, you know, we need you because you're the best at blah, because you studied blah at the Vulcan Science Academy, and you're the only one in the world who can do blah. Please help us.
Yeah.
Possibly. I think it more has to do with her involvement in the incident in the first place, but yeah.
But it could be both, because like, why would they or come to her?
Right. Right, exactly.
Maybe she saw something on the Klingon ship when she was
there. Yeah, maybe.
So if you look in the trailer to talk about why they need her, is the Shenzhou pretty clearly survives. It's just blown into some pieces, but it survives for the most part. And it looks like they send her back along with some other people, like Stamets and Tilly and Landry, who we haven't seen really at all, but she shows up in the trailer briefly, back to the Hulk, you know, the busted Hulk of the Shenzhou, because it shows them running around kind of alien style, like alien movie style.
Oh, interesting.
Like in dark corridors with flashlights and like getting creeped out and getting freaked out and running. So I currently, the sort of, you know, implication of all that, sort of what you can tease out of that, is we assume then that there's something of value towards ending the war, perhaps, or whatever, towards turning a tide in this Klingon war that she seems to have instigated, perhaps, that is on the Shenzhou. So again, that goes
like
back to that.
Like the amulet of Kaelas or something.
Sure, exactly. So that goes back to that, only you can do this thing, which is like, hey, you were the, you know, you're the surviving, like, you know, first officer of this ship. You know, this ship, like the back, you know, because we're pretty sure Yeo's character, you know, bites the bullet right away, right? So Burnham's the only person who knows the ship, like the back of her hand or whatever. So they recruit her, they go back, it's successful, yay. And I assume then they're like, okay, you're back in our good graces under Lorca's, you know, watchful eye or whatever. So there you go. That's sort of what we've been able to piece together at this point. 75% accuracy.
Well done, that's some good detective work right there.
And more to come. So check trekmovie.com hourly lots more. If you must. Smash that refresh button, folks.
Yeah.
But seriously, though, we are going to have like a really intense series of articles about this. So
we are. We're going to break down as much as we can about characters
in required Trekkie fashion.
Yes,
this will be broken down to the nth degree. So I know y'all are. I don't want to see that. Like for like seriously,
picked apart.
Yeah, picked apart. Yeah. As far as it can be picked.
Can we just talk about the props for a second again? Just because I'm really impressed by how cool they look. We didn't really talk about that as much, but
yeah. By all means, please.
But folks who've been following all this stuff, sort of the lead up to Comic-Con, CBS started to send out little teases, little videos on Twitter that kind of teased the props in kind of an annoying little, like, you know, not very deep focus little, you know, little spins of like it would spin the prop and you kind of see it kind of out of focus. So, but it was tantalizing because it looked really good. And the photos we got, you know, that Kayla got from the cool exhibit, these look really great. Like, I super want to hold one, like, so badly. Mm-hmm. Like, hold a phaser, hold a tricorder, hold a communicator.
Yeah.
Love it. So.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they did a great job splitting the difference, sort of, between what we would expect and,
there's a nice blend.
They're very heavily influenced, but they are very heavily TOS.
Oh, they're very heavily TOS. And at first, I wasn't in love with just quite how TOS they swung, but they're still really great. So I'm cool with it.
So,
and they do a good job.
I dug them.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the one thing that they did is they have a proper phaser rifle, which, of course, wasn't really a thing in TOS. Like, there was that one thing that looked like a 50s
Ray gun. Yeah, in the cage.
Yeah, and Gene hated it.
Yeah, from When No Man Has Gone Before.
When No Man Has Gone Before. You're right, not the cage.
And it was, but it just, but the nice part is I think they did a really good job echoing that just a little bit. There's like three, you know, there's like three kind of, you know, ribbed areas that look to be like vents, basically. But there are three ribbed areas that look a heck of a lot like the three copper power packs or whatever they were in the Where No Man Has Gone Before phaser rifle. But the great thing about it is that it also looks a heck of a lot like, in a good continuity kind of thing, it also reminds quite a bit of, say, some of the Mako gear that would be from Enterprise. So that's kind of a nice sort of forward-backward kind of continuity of weapon design. Of like, yeah, this looks like, you know, something that's been used before. Because, of course, what you want is familiarity. And I don't mean, like, to the fans. I mean, like, as if this were real life, you would want something that people have been trained on before, right? You would want things that are familiar, a platform that's familiar. So cool, kudos to them. I really like that.
Yep. Yeah, the props look great.
Yep.
Everybody like them?
Yeah.
I'm kind of dying to know how you guys are feeling after this just week of just barrage of news. We've learned so much, and I'm curious to know how your thoughts have changed or how they haven't on just in the show in general.
My expectations are still in doubt.
Okay.
Right? Like, especially to return to what we were saying earlier about the grittiness, right? In some ways, just seeing stuff in general, seeing this deluge of news communicates that, yes, they have a plan, which is great because for a long time there, I wasn't convinced that they did. But if that plan will be the next great chapter in the franchise, I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've said we need to, there's no such thing, and it would be hard to convey, but I've said we need a cautiously optimistic emoji.
There we go.
In our
cautious
stack.
Optimism. Yeah.
Because,
I like that.
Because, you know, everything they say, I'm like, okay, that's pretty reasonable. But, you know, and there's that ... But what about that? Can you really deliver that? Are you saying gritty because it's a buzzword, or is it really, like, too gritty? You know, all those things. Cautiously optimistic is the watchword for me.
Yes, I will go along with that as well. I was a little put off, like I said, about how dark I felt it was, and the notion of staring at a war storyline for an entire season. But yeah. I am. That said, it looks like there's a lot of love and care being put into this, and I am going to give it every opportunity I can to succeed.
And I think that's the important thing. Is like, no one's going, nope, not my trick. Reject. We're like, yeah, we have reservations, but we're sure gonna go give it a try, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, also, like, IDIC, just because it's not your Trek doesn't mean it's not Trek.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
So.
Well said.
Yep.
But
what do you think, Kayla?
I'd have to say that I'm definitely more excited for it than I was previously.
You also got to meet everyone in the crew, though, so you have an edge on all
of us. I know. I realize that being there is a bit of a different experience, but at the same time, and like I said, I was when I heard the word war a lot in that press conference, and I was like, you guys, I don't like war. We don't like this. Mm. And like, I was worried about that, and I was worried about the Sinequa's thing about the all good stories are gritty, but I'm just like, everything else you're doing is like exactly, I'm loving everything that I'm confused by, but I want to reserve judgment. And I think you guys know, mm-hmm. and I know Brian knows about me, that I'm like a very optimistic person in general. And I'm just going to like hope for the best because, sure. As Brian knows, I get severely let down sometimes. And text Ryan going, what's
happening?
It's okay.
Happening? It's better to shoot high, though.
But that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, you know what? We don't know right now. And part of the fun of this is being excited for it before you come out. You know, what is it? Having is not so pleasing a thing as wanting.
Mm-hmm. It is not logical, but it is often true.
It is often true.
Yes, it is often true.
And if I'm just going to say, you know what? I won't even say non-zero chance. Like, there's a good chance that it's going to be amazing. Like, mm-hmm. incredible. And it's going to hit all the right notes and just pump the franchise. And you know, and there's also a chance that it will fail. But I'm like, you know what? The fact that there's it's like a Schrodinger's thing, right? At this moment, it both failed.
Yes,
and
totally.
It is both the worst and best Star Trek series that has never aired. Because
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, before. So yes. I'm just going to think about it being possibly the best. And if, you know, but not making any assumptions on what it's going to be, because I don't want to be let down thinking, oh, I thought they were going to do this and they didn't. I just want it to be good. I just want to enjoy it. I want it to do well for the franchise. However they managed to do that. So I don't want to set up expectations, but I'm going to stay optimistic, and I'm just going to be super psyched about it for a while.
Good.
Well, that's good. Right. That's legit.
Ending on a high note. I like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, unless Jared has a Trek anecdote for us.
Oh, let's see. I mean, I've always got a couple. I have kind of a New Jersey themed Star Trek Trek anecdote for Brian.
All right.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, so I was back in the U.S. briefly with my family, and we were driving around in New Jersey, and my niece, my oldest niece, kept doing this, like, ludicrous, cartoonish, like, New Jersey accent all the time. Like, you know, saying all these cliche phrases, like, get out of here, forget about it, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I remembered that scene in Star Trek IV where Scotty and Bones are doing the transparent aluminum. And I said to her, honey, don't bury yourself in the part, right? Anyway, I love that scene. And
you know who's in that scene? Kayla's favorite person.
Yes, Madeline. That's right.
Madeline.
That's right, Madeline.
Not now, Madeline.
Not now, Madeline.
have you ever cosplayed as Madeline, Kayla?
No, but I want to.
You totally
should. Oh, you
should have
to, Kayla, you have to.
You have to get Andy to do like a little I Quit Smoking Today patch and stuff.
Yes.
So he can be...
Yes. And that we could actually pull off in the next week, I think.
You totally could, because you just have to go find like 80s clothes, which is not hard. So there
good
you go.
Goodwill trip this weekend.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And speaking of next week, so Kayla, Matt, and myself will be going to Vegas.
Yep.
Where we will be covering, obviously, Discovery, TNG's 30th anniversary, and everything else under the sun. So keep your eyes open for that next week. If anything big comes out of that, maybe we'll do a quick podcast there, too. Who knows?
So keep your ears open fantastic. For that.
Yeah. So keep your eyes and ears open, people.
And browser windows.
Set your homepage
indeed.
To Trek.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what, though? I will actually legitimately solicit something from our listeners right now. If you've made it all the way to the end of this podcast, first of all, congratulations. We know we're running way long. Second of all, if you like the podcast, it actually really helps us if you give us a review on iTunes. If you want to write something, even if it's not 5 stars, although, you know, we love 5 stars. If you just go and, you know, just click one of those stars and say what you like about the podcast. It really does help us out a lot. So yeah, if you could do that, we would be eternally grateful.
I would add that regardless of what you think about the podcast, there are 5 stars. So be sure to vote to do that.
Well done.
We accept 4, but 5 is ideal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that just about does it for us this week, huh, guys?
Yeah.
Marathon. Yep, I think we're good.
That was a lot.
Thanks, everybody, for their hard work at the San Diego Comic-Con, especially you, Kayla.
Thank you.
Yes, amazing work.
It takes a village.
That's true.
So, all right, we'll see you guys next time on the Shuttle Pod.
Bye, guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.